as much as we can to kind of change in this regard. I am nominating the chairperson of the Select Committee Education and Recreation because she is the chair to sit over the meeting for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maporo. Is there any secondment to the nomination of Honorable Zwane? Honorable Sipukwana? Thank you, Honorable Sipukwana. Is there any other nomination? In the absence of any further nominations, I will declare Honorable Zwane the acting chairperson for our meeting today. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members of the Select Committee. Thank you for the honor of electing me as the acting chairperson. Morning, officials from the Department of Human Settlement, as well as our own staff. I suggest that we proceed with the deliberations at the engagement of today. In the absence of the chairperson, let me welcome the department. The purpose of our engagement today is to talk about the annual report, for which we have prepared a presentation to brief the committee. We want to welcome you. We hope that you are going to be able to do the presentation within the specified time that will be allocated, after which we then allow the members of the Select Committee to engage the presentation. We have had an engagement with you before, but I don't know if you can still remember who it's for. Maybe for purposes of refreshing our memory, we may reintroduce ourselves. I'm Lynette Barney, the member of the Select Committee. A member of the committee.
Thanks, acting chair. Domuli Kaula, member of the committee.
Lynn Ikamantin, the Sandam Goku member of the committee. Lynn Ikamantan, the Kambos Bugwana, Lungulali committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dick Hanstock. I'm a member of this select committee. Yes.
The department to introduce the officials present.
I don't know which one is like you said. Good morning. My name is Mbulelo Cham, Chief Operations Officer of the Department of Human Settlement. I'm with my colleagues here, they will discuss.
I'm acting CFO.
Good morning, members. My name is Moirani Moirani. I'm from the National Department of Human Settlement.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Nidhi Dekhara. I'm the Assistant to the Director General.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Swazi. I'm the CLO for the Department of Human Settlement.
Good morning. My name is Juan Nkosi. I'm a chief director in the Office of the Director General.
My honourable members, I'm a Minister for Melania, advisor to the minister.
And our own staff.
Good morning. My name is Mkuli Molo. I'm a researcher for the committee. morning. I'm Sean Whiting. I'm also a researcher for this committee.
Good morning. I'm Tabule Kete, content advisor for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Peter Manka. I'm a commercial coordinator for the committee.
Is the legislative practice to introduce yourself?
My name is Elsie. I'm from the parliamentary monitoring group.
Thank you for the introduction. As it has been explained, under item 2 of question, the chapter is on official engagement out in Pretoria. I've received a message that the minister, both the minister and the deputy, are held up in the National Assembly. This is very important business for the National Assembly, as you can all remember today. So they will not be able to participate in this meeting. I don't know if there are any other approaches from the that you know.
Thank you, sir. I have an apology from Honorable Pranavat, who is booked off. And there's also another approach from Honorable Mathis. Those are the two approaches.
Honorable Pranavat and Mathis, Honorable Stokes.
No, thank you very much. I'd like to be excused at 12 o'clock if the meeting is going to run beyond 12 o'clock because I've got a commitment at 12. It's a party political commitment. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, just I move for the adoption of the agenda. Honorable Maporomos, who is seconding? Oh, thank you, Honorable Gogo is seconding. The fourth item is the briefing by the department. As I did explain earlier on that you are presenting your annual report to the state committee, procedural, something that you have to do, whether you were able to align and achieve your target in terms of the strategic framework that you have gone for the department, whether you were able to achieve the target that you set for yourself, whether you did align your indicators accordingly, and where you shifted or changed the indicators and the target to get the necessary approval in terms of the regulation. Also tell us about the progress you're making with regard to all the programs that you are running. But we do appreciate the fact that you got an amplified audit for the year under review. We really do appreciate that. But alongside that, the NCOP has got a specific interest in terms of making or ensuring that the provincial interest is taken care of in the national sphere of government. To that extent, we always do appreciate that when department comes before us, the presentation is formatted in such a manner that we can actually see the status quo prevailing in the provinces. We understand that you are interrelated in the provinces, but there would be distinct difference. However, we also do rely very heavily on the national department to ensure that you assist them. Also with respect to their financial management issue, so that if in a department they get an adverse or bad audit report, then we look up to the national government to have been able to provide guidance. If they are backwards with the target, we also do look up to you to have been able to give guidance also in that regard. So we are going to be looking at those issues, the programs that are running, the upgrades of the informal settlement, rental house store, lease, and all those programs that you are fast-tracking, so as to see that as a nation, are we close to reaching the target as we are setting ourselves for this era or for this panel. With those few words, then I will head over to the leader of the delegation for the department to take us through. I don't know whether I want to be presenting or the group. Amongst yourself, you know how you set yourself, then over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to clarify one point first before we talk about DG, we've turned up to the DG's apology. Yeah, swearing up. Swearing up. We've turned up the DG's apology. The DG is down with a nurse about the flu. He's been working flat out the whole weekend, chasing provincial targets. He's met with the NCs of a number of provinces. He had to tell his apology, so he didn't come to work yesterday and today. So we want to put that as an apology. But we have a capable team here that will be able to answer all the questions and present the state of performance of the departments in 2015. So the way we've structured our presentation, we will be able to cover all of the areas that you have mentioned. We will show you a breakdown of provincial governments. You recall that we are administering a budget of about 8 billion rands. And the bulk of that budget is implemented in the provinces and municipalities. So the acting CFO sitting next to me will be able to take you through the provincial performance breakdown. We will be able to demonstrate that to you. When we structure the presentation, Chair, we'll start with the overview. This is the part that I will take care of. In the second part, we will look at the performance of the National Department as the approved annual performance plan, the APP of 2015-2014. We will then look at the departmental expenditure versus the performance targets, including the outcomes. And then number four, we will look at the sector as a whole, the sector performance. When we talk about the sector, that's where we include provinces. We include municipalities. There's an amount of about 10 billion rands that we dispersed to the metropolitan municipalities. And that is the urban settlements development grant. The other 17 billion rands goes to the provincial departments of human services. So in that section, we will cover the communication and outreach program that we've done in the last financial year, some of the mega projects, special authority projects that we delivered. We will look at the delivery agreements, how we perform in terms of the delivery agreements on outcome 8. You recall that the past term of government's main focus was on outcomes. We had a number of outcomes that we contracted to achieve. We will look at those outcomes. We will look at job creation. We will also look at the accreditation of municipalities, also conducted to get some municipalities conducted. Then we'll come to the functional issues and the TCF will take care of that. And we'll end up with the responses to the audited outcomes, the action plan on the audit issues that are raised by the audit general. Without wasting time, Chair, we as a department, like I said, the bulk of our budget is implemented in provinces. But we guide in implementation because this is a conditional grant. It has to buy a certain outcomes. So we meet with provinces. They contract to the account office and submit annual business plans which specifies how they are going to spend the allocation. So provinces are our delivery agents. So we will look at how they have performed over the last year. The department will also touch on a number of key policy issues that we've raised in the last financial year as well. The department has revised what we call the finance-linked individual subsidy program. This is FLIS in short. And this is a program that is intended to improve the ability of households in the income category, those income earners, 20,500, and 15,000 to access mortgage finance for housing and also increasing access to housing finance. We always refer to this income group as the gap market. These are people who are not serviced well by the banks or private funders, and they are not serviced well by government. So that's how we refer to it as gap market, so that is 2,000 to 15,000. There's an instrument that we've developed, and this instrument is called the FLIS instrument, the Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program. We've approved that policy. We also had a number of engagements with private sector, companies, not to pipeline development company, how many goals, to encourage investment in this sector. One of the things that we have realized is that we will not be able to make a dent on the housing deadlock if we don't partner with some of the developers in the private sector, and private funders. So we started this initiative slowly in the last financial year. We also introduced the NSPU program. This is the National Sanitation Program Unit. You will recall that this unit used to be managed by the Department of Water Affairs, but it now falls, in the last term of government, it moved to the Department of Human Services. It has gone back now to Water and Sanitation. We're managing the transition. We can share with the colleagues where that process is. But we have already transferred the program, transferred the grant. There are legal issues or contractual issues that we are managing with the accounting officer of Water and Sanitation. We can share that with you. But the team has monitored the performance of the municipal infrastructure grant so far as sanitation is concerned. There's a total number of 152 unique projects which were assessed and monitored. The reason why this is important, it is important because the bigger part of municipal infrastructure grant is about water and sanitation. The formula makes it explicitly clear that almost more than 50%, in fact, of the municipal infrastructure grant has to go into funding water and sanitation. We have to monitor this because in reality, what municipalities tend to do, they tend to, if sanitation and water projects are not performed, they tend to shift the funds to other projects, roads, stormwater drainage, and many other related municipal engineering services. So we monitor this to make sure that sanitation money stays in sanitation, because sanitation is a massive challenge for us in human settings. There's also what we call the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant. All these grants, the RIT grants, are now going to be administered by the Department of Water and Sanitation. There are 24 benefiting municipalities. The allocation of RIT is pretty safe, or we'll talk to that. It's an amount of about 100 million rands, which we disperse to the water service authorities, and those are municipalities who are functioning as water service authorities. They are responsible for water and sanitation. There are about 24 of these municipalities. It's a rural household infrastructure grant. Current Minister for Water and Sanitation is of the view that it should not just be funding credits, because currently that's what it does. It funds the provision of toilets in rural areas. And it is of the view that it needs to fund rural infrastructure initiatives, not just the toilets. There's also the management of the urban settlements development grants, the development grant there, which is called the USDG. And this grant, the USDG, is administered by the Metropolitan Municipality. We will show you how they have performed. I think there are two metros that did spend that we are in the last financial year. And the CFO showed that. That is Joburg Metro and the City of Cape Town. The first to spend the grant. I think Joburg Metro spent 94% of the grant, and Cape Town spent about 77% of the grant. But we'll come back to the actual figures, and the CFO will communicate that to you. South Africa is also a permanent member of UN Habitat, and it continues to advocate and play an instrument role for the support of the settlements program in Africa. We will talk about the World Urban Forum programs that we've managed. That we have attended to and participated. You recall that South Africa is a founding member of the World Urban Forum, and we managed that together with the Habitat. The last World Urban Forum was in Colombia. We participated both in World Urban Forum Fix in Italy, in Napoli, and also the one in Colombia, the World Urban Forum 7. The Department of Human Settlements hosted a delegation from Angola, Ministry of Construction in March 2014. We're highlighting all these strategic engagements and partnerships with various international players for your noting, because most of them are in the annual report, but we will move with speed on the one step time. There's also an MOU that we have signed on cooperation in the field of human settlements. We signed this MOU with the Angolan delegation in the last financial year. The Rental Housing Amendment Bill 2014 has been formally introduced into Parliament on the 20th of November 2015. This amendment bill is an important piece of legislation for us because it begins to take care of people in the backyards. There are people who are renting in backyards. In some cases, people get evicted without following energy processes in the backyard. So we've tried to broaden the scope of taking care of people who are renting formally and informally. One of the things that this piece of legislation advocating is that we need to have is rental tribunal offices in almost every municipality so that we are able to cover as many people as possible. If there is a need for us to come to this committee to present that legislation, I'm sure we can do that. It's a good piece of legislation, and it's one of the most progressive pieces of legislation that we've developed. There's a new policy on backyard rental program. It's a very difficult policy to master. When we do have that policy, we partnered with SALGA in formulating that policy. SALGA helped us with the case studies, they help us with the business case for the policy, the discussion documents, we had that with SALGA. We do have now a policy which was presented on the backyard rental program. It's always extremely difficult to operationalize this policy because one of the things that we have experienced in Gauteng, because we started piloting this in Gauteng, Soweto, Zola, to be specific. The question has always been, who do you give the subsidy to? Who gives the subsidy to the landlord? Or do you give the subsidy to the backyard? And if you give the subsidy to the landlord, this becomes a double-dipping exercise. Because that landlord is getting a subsidy now for the second time. So there are practical operational issues that we deal with. In some cases, because people in the backyard are hidden, so we had to prioritize the formal settlement and not people stay in the backyard. We find that in most backyards, at night, people use baguettes because in some houses, the toilet is in the house. It's not in the backyard. But you also have those townships where toilets are outside. But you find that outside in the backyard, you have one toilet, which is servicing maybe 6 households, or even more than that, 7 or 8 households. So what we thought could help us is to prioritize the provision of services in those backyards. But as you upgrade the services in the backyard, you also need to upgrade the capacity of the infrastructure. Because there's no point in increasing services in the backyard if the capacity of the infrastructure in that particular locality is not upgraded. So there are complexities that we need to deal with as operationalize this program. Some metropolitan municipalities have started implementing this. I think Nelson Mandela, City of Cape Town, and Johannesburg have started prioritizing services in the backyards. In fact, we discussed that yesterday with the City of Nelson Mandela and the City of Johannesburg. There's also the CRU policy, which was adjusted in regard to the quantum levels. The CRU is what we used to call the hostel redevelopment program. We converted the hostel redevelopment program into CRU, and it's 100% funded from the districts, unlike other rental housing programs where there's leveraging. So we had to tweak this policy a little bit. So I must say it's an expensive program. But it is a necessary program because we have a lot of hostels, old hostels in the country that we want to convert into habitable family units. The department embarked on filling all the vacant positions to address the challenge of skills. The strengthening of inward and capacity development initiatives is aimed to achieve the mandate of the department. The mandate of the department has shifted. We used to be called the Department of Housing, and we used to be contend with policy development issues and other transitional related activities. Now we are expected to be a little bit more hands-on because there's no capacity in process in some municipalities. So the accounting office and executive authority introduced a unit called the Program Management Unit within the department. And this is about focusing or managing most of the programs that will make us achieve our targets, which then means that our recruitment drive has to change. We need to get all the engineers, in some cases we need to get the campaigners, we need to get construction project managers, we need to get program managers who are going to help us to achieve this target. The reality is that they may come cheap, they don't come cheap. And most of them would prefer to work for the private sector and to work for government because they get lucrative contracts in the private sector. We've seen it in the past 10 years. Some of them have gone to Dubai, Canada. Just to give you an example, if you look at DBSA and you look at ESCOM, the lowest paid project manager there would not earn anything less than 800,000. Those organizations, the DFIs, our DFIs, they pay even less. And some of our program managers and project managers don't earn that much, even though we have introduced the OHT program, the two categories, category B and category A. We're still struggling to match the private sector competition. So recruitment has become a major challenge. In fact, we tried in some senses with the advice from the minister in this current financial year to relax some of the conditions, for instance, for body packaging and planning, which is the most difficult part in the settlements. We decided to reduce, maybe to relax, just focus on people who have experience in the built environment instead of recruiting some professional sound and regional planners. So that's another way of going around the field shortages, because we advertise in one component twice and we struggle to find the right candidates. But we started with the headhunting as well. The reality is that we're in the built environment. That's where we are. In the built environment, we need specialized people to help you to manage construction-related projects. The overall achievement by the Department of the Human Settlements during the financial year 2013-2014 is 79. And this basically means that we didn't achieve our target. We didn't meet our target 100%. We were sitting at the end of the year, we were sitting at 79% of our targets. Obviously, the targets don't carry the same weight. They are significant targets that carry a lot of weight that we cannot afford to miss. But there are the targets as well that are quantitative targets, but they don't carry much weight. Out of 126 targets which were planned for the period under review, this is 2013-2014, 99 targets were achieved, whilst 27 targets were not achieved. This doesn't mean much, because again, if you don't understand the weight associated with the targets, you won't know whether the 27 carries more weight or the 99 carries more weight. So this is just quantitative reporting. We will get back to the qualitative aspect of this target. But this is just to show you at a glance the picture, the overall picture that we contracted to deliver 126 targets. And we only achieved 99 of those 126. In the next slides, we will break them down. If you look at the APP and you look at the programs in the Humboldt, and in fact, these are not APP related, because in the APP you have programs. This is how the organization is structured. These are branches within the organization that are helping the organization to meet the APP targets. On the finance side and also on the non-financial side, that's what we're trying to do here, to show you the non-financial and the financial targets. What we usually call Program 1 is the administration. In Program 1, they had a budget, an operational budget of 346 million, and they spent 247 million. There's a variance there of about 99 million. So they spend about 71% of what they contracted to achieve this program. The planned targets, this is on the qualitative side, then they contracted to deliver 25 targets and they achieved 24. There's a variance of one. This is on the non-financial side. So they're sitting at 96%. The second program, which is Human Settlement Delivery Framework, this is Program 2. This is what we usually call Program 2. Here, they had a budget of 37 million, and they spent about 36 million of that budget. And they're sitting at about 98%. They underspend about 816,000. That's not a very significant underspend. So they're sitting at 98%. That's the financial targets. The non-financial targets, the contractor to deliver 24,000, and they achieved 13 out of those 24. Sorry, the contractor to deliver 24 targets, and they achieved 13 of those targets, and they underperformed by 11. I'm not going to take you through all of them one by one, but if you look at the organization as a whole, the total at the bottom, we had an operational budget of 883 million in the last financial year, which is a very small budget, considering the total budget, the capital budget that we have to manage as a sector. That 1,883 million is managing a budget of about 80 billion rands, which is very insignificant. We spend about 616 million of that budget. There's a variance of 256 million. And if you look at that variance, it comes from mainly the three components, and that is the program management unit, and the bulk of that, there is a program called the NASP program. This is the National Upgrading Support Program, which underperformed in the last initial year. We will come back to the nature of the program that didn't form. But again, this is a summary of the financial and the non-financial targets in the last financial year. On the financial side, we spent 20% of what was allocated to the operational budget of the department. On the non-financial, we achieved 79% of the targets. I think I've already touched on that as well. Now let's come to the sector, because that's where the bulk of the budget goes. That is where the 20 billion range of the joint settlements lands goes. And look at how we have performed. We'll start with the outreach program. I won't bore you too much with this. These are some of the events that have taken place in the last financial year. Our communications directorate had a number of, together with the ministry, had a number of ministerial outreach programs in the last financial year. This was done in collaboration with municipalities and provinces. There were public engagements, included exhibitions during the annual rain show, where we were showcasing our products and services. We also did the same in the Pretoria show. We attend the South African Housing Foundation. We always attend this program and present and exhibit our products and services as a department and as a sector. We also attended the BRICS conference in the last financial year. We distributed about 4,500 generic publications, and they were distributed through the GIS library. Parliament, the Strong Services, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. This is just our outreach program that we embarked on in the last financial year. We had the door-to-door campaigns in the last financial year. Again, I'm not going to waste your time too much on this. Once we get to the track of the performance of the capital budget, the 20 billion rands, we had in-deals. We had the youth and women deals in the last financial year. Sanitation week. Part of our sanitation program, we've got what we call the hygiene aspect of sanitation, where we go out to communities and teach them about all the hygiene related matters. We have international days as well on hygiene. We had one in Makaza, in Kailicha. We also launched our FLIST program. We talked earlier about reviewing the program, the finance linked individual subsidy program. We launched that program in Roma. There's a project called Roma Ring. It's a very beautiful program next to the airport in Port Elizabeth, Nelson Mandela. We launched this program. It's a niche type of development program. There's a rental part of it, and there's also home ownership part of it. Very beautiful project. You can visit it as well. The community engagement for the budget vote in Danun. Danun is here in the Western Cape, next to Melafin. We also started the process of drafting the Green Paper. You will see it now in TSF, the Medium Term Strategy Framework for this term of government. And we're contracting to get that Green Paper developed. We started the process in the last financial year. We are finding the process provider to help us with this exercise. The Rural Housing Strategy Framework was developed and discussed, the framework at this stage. We have sector-wide reporting indicators. We also develop those indicators because we need to refine the indicators, the reporting indicators, so that we're able to extrapolate the information and compare apples with apples, because if you don't standardize the reporting in the field has just become extremely difficult to do comparison.
Let me just check. So
yes, ma'am.
You can just talk to the text, just give you that.
Yeah, did it.
Sorry.
But I know we have to be done by 12.
The presentation, the entire engagement will be by me. So I think we are left in order for 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
Your presentation is quite safe.
We will finish within 30 minutes. Thanks, teacher. Okay, I'm not going to take you through some of these high-level consultative processes. So maybe we need to move with speed and go straight to the real issues, which is about how the budget performed in the last financial year. All of these are high-level policy issues, reviewing some of the programs that we are managing. We do have a program called the Digital Housing Process, which is more about getting people to build houses for themselves instead of waiting for government to build houses. You'll see it in the NDP and also in our MTS. I won't spend time on this. I've talked about the WOOF, the World Urban Forum earlier. The last one was in Medellin in Colombia. I won't spend time on that one. Stakeholder and IGR engagement. There is a mega project in Chiquin North, which is called Colombia. It's one of our new projects. We launched that project last year. Please visit it if you have time. There's also a fast forward project which was donated to us by the school government. Very beautiful project. It was invaded last year, but the province and ourselves intervened and got a court order. It's a very beautiful project. Those houses are very beautiful in Kraskop. And again, we handed over that project to the South African government. And the province, together with ourselves, must hand over the units to the communities. You are aware about the Garden Media Awards. I'm not going to spend time on that. These are other engagements that we had. Let's move with speed and maybe get into a real issue. The new build program, the amount of money that we raised, the donations that were made by communities, by stakeholders, on the youth build and the volunteers, and that was administered by NHPC. Again, I'm not going to waste time on that. We can go to outcome age. In terms of outcome age, you will recall that in the beginning of the last term of government, we contracted the sector to deliver 400,000 services, to deliver services to 400,000 households. And this is one of the biggest deliverables that we needed to achieve in the last financial year. The target was achieved, in fact, we exceeded that target. In the last financial year, we delivered 87,000. But the total 5 years was, for what was achieved in the last 5 years, was 447,780 households were assisted in informal settlements. Remember, this target is about the provision of basic services in informal settlements. And part of it is about security of trade. When we formalize informal settlements, what we call in some areas inbound, people who evade lands and establish shacks without any services. You have to formalize that. We have to provide security of area so that people are aware that they are not going to be moved again. And they can start building their own structures and not wait for coming until we upgrade the program up to stage 4 of the UISP program. But the starting point is to formalize the informal settlements, provide the basic services. So we exceeded that target, and we were sitting at 111% of what we projected to do. The National Basic Support Program, this is one program that we are managing ourselves. We targeted to package plans, informal settlements upgrading plans, in 50 municipalities, top 50 municipalities. And the reason why we talk about the top 50 is because that is where the majority of the informal settlements are in this country. They are in the 8 metros, which we all know, and then the other secondary towns, the top 50 secondary towns. Some of them are provincial capitals, so to speak. That target, we achieved it. We didn't achieve it. We're sitting at 47%, 47 out of 9 of the targeted. The 50, we included 2 other municipalities, but the target for 5 years was 49. Now, so this is the National Upgrading Support Program. We have a budget from Treasury where we have deployed professional teams, engineers, consulting engineering firms in some states because we didn't have in-house capacity, town planners, to go to informal settlements and count the dwellings that informal settlement and the beneficiaries do geotech assessments to check whether the informal settlement is upgradable where it is, because some informal settlements are in areas where you cannot do any upgrading. So to do that kind of work is a very tedious and time-consuming work, but it is necessary. Before you start with the construction of upgrading any informal settlement, you need to come up with a plan on how the informal settlement is going to be upgraded. It is beginning to pay dividends in a number of other areas. This current financial year, we're contracting to, we have 300 informal settlement plans. Now, if you break down that target, the Randall accommodation target by province, we didn't achieve this target. Again, I thought it would give you a picture of how provinces have performed in terms of this particular target. You look at the Eastern Cape, you look at the total. In the last financial year, we delivered 5,704. In this current financial year, I think there's a mistake there. It should have been 2014-2016. And that target will be reduced downwards. So in the last financial year, we didn't perform well, just to give you the figures. We didn't meet the rental housing target in the last 5 years. And one of the reasons why we didn't meet the rental housing target is because the nature of our social housing program, the bulk of the rental housing target comes from the social housing program. And the funding arrangement in that program is such that 30% of the funding comes from the national government in the form of the 40% comes from the national government in the form of the restructuring grant. The other 30% comes from the provincial government in the form of the institutional top-up. The other 30% to meet 100, you have 30 and 40, comes from the fiscal. The last 30 comes from private equity and private funders. So you have a very complicated funding mix which helps you to fund the program. In some instances, the other 30% top-up from private equity would come from NHSC, which is the National Housing Finance Corporation, owned by government. The family is a shareholder, is a sole shareholder of that entity. Now, the challenge that you have is that in most cases, it's difficult to find the private funders to find some of those projects. And the amount of budget that we have with the NHSC could not cope with the pipeline as well. So we didn't meet the target because it is a very difficult program to fund. But when the program was initiated, and this is the point that the minister communicated in every public platform, the program was intended to cut in the private sector funders. These are the ones that rely entirely on the fiscal. Because if you have 40% from the national government, 80% from the provincial fiscal, and then you have 30% from NHSC, it means that the entire program is funded from the fiscal. And that is not sustainable in the long run. We will come back to that program as well on the rental housing program. The revision of the current social and rental housing policies is in process. We need to review the policy, the process. But also, you are aware that the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, SHRA, which is the institution that runs this particular program, the social housing program, is under administration. Mr. put it under administration in July this year because there was government issues there that we needed to deal with. And that slowed down the process as well of delivery. We're not using that as an excuse. I think our role as senior managers is to account for both good and bad performance. Declaration of additional restructuring zones. You will recall that social housing is the only program that deals directly. So there are other programs, but this is one program that helps us to deal directly with property dispersal megasites. Because we don't build rental housing everywhere. We build rental housing in well-located areas, next to transport amenities. If you look at all the social housing projects in this city, in the city of Joburg, in Buffalo City, you find that most of those rental housing or social housing projects in well-located areas. Here, you have Skandek and you have Jonathan and Similarity. Those are well-related to rental housing projects. In fact, we think that those are private sector projects. They're not similar settlements projects. If you go to Buffalo City, this one, and you have MRSI, you have Flare Wolf in Johannesburg, those are all beautiful projects that we've delivered. These are all rental housing projects that we've delivered. We want to upscale on those projects, and that's why the minister is trying to stabilize the institution, the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, so that it can do what it was created to do.
Okay, there were challenges. I'm not going to dwell on them. We didn't meet the strategic zone targets, because before we build Uganda stock, we need to declare the area as a restructuring zone. So we can give you a long list of all the areas that will be declared restructuring zones in this year. There were targets. We had a number of workshops to capacitate the municipalities on accreditation. This is one contentious area, especially in the metropolitan areas. But we felt that the bulk of the work that has been done to date was more about box ticking. What our minister wanted the metro to do is to focus on implementing mega projects. It should be accreditation by doing, not accreditation by complying. In other words, metropolitan municipalities must help us to change the spatial configuration of our cities. So the projects that we will be contracting to implement in the next 5 years are projects that will help us to do economic integration, that will help us to do spatial integration and racial integration in the greater various communities. Because currently we tend to build houses in the periphery of the towns, and we're not in the greater communities, because that is where cheap land is. So our minister is changing that approach completely to say we're going to have to integrate communities, and we need to do this. We will need the mega projects that will be able to change the spatial configuration of our cities. And you can see some of the mega projects that are running already are beginning to do this. So we conducted in the last 5 years to accredit and assign the 8 metropolitan municipalities. We didn't meet that target. The accreditation target, we only achieved, I think, 78% of the target. All secondary towns were accredited to level 2. All the 8 metros were accredited to level 2. That means they can package their own project. They can administer as a part of the grant. But their accountability still lies with the province. The disbursement of a grant by the National Department goes to the province. It doesn't go directly. Once they have been assigned, then there will be a direct disbursement from the National Government Department directly to the metropolitan municipalities. Because assignment means, in traditional terms, you are accredited for level 3. As you can see, we were sitting at 74% of the target. 8 district municipalities and 20 metropolitan and district municipalities were given to level 2. 8 districts and local municipalities were given level 1. We can give you a list of all of those 20 metros. 8 metros, you know all of them, and there are towns that were given level 2. Some of them will be around the next. We'll give you that list. An additional here, this was about the utilization of land for human settlements development. This is one target that we exceeded, but the biggest debate about it is, which has raised very sharply this current financial day, is not here. It should not just be about assembling land, it should be about developing that land. As you will see, in our MTS, this target has changed, saying that HA must acquire land, rezone that land, package that land for development. In the last financial year, they simply acquired the land and released the land. And the rezoning and the packaging was not to provinces and municipalities to do. But the target was exceeded. This is a 5-year target, because this is an outcome in 2014. So we just wanted to show you that over the last 5 years, we projected to assemble and release 2,600 hectares of land. And the outcome is we are seeing. We probably under-targeted. That is why we overachieved and exceeded that target. We exceeded the target by far, by almost 180%. But we have tightened it up a little bit in this term of numbers. So there is rezoning, there is packaging, and there is development. That target is managed by HDA, because that's what HDA was formed to develop us to acquire land and package projects for the land. Up before, which was about the MDI, we didn't meet this target because there were a number of outstanding issues between ourselves and treasurers and the reserve bank. And again, we should understand why treasury was a little bit jittery of this particular target, because we didn't want to commit other people to this. Now, my MDI is about risk sharing between governments and the private sector. The bigger part of MDI is about sharing the risk when you borrow or you lend to a very risky market. And you need to be able to ask how the risk is being shared. and most of the private sector funders were saying, look, it looks like the risk sharing is only applicable to us as funders, and we don't see how government is going to share that risk. So we discussed this because this plan is using it in the US, in the UK, whole question of the credit crunch, and how the property market has performed in those countries. So Treasury was very conservative in playing its mind on this particular action, and it's understandable. And again, the fiscal is not doing well. And one of the things that they have stated quite clearly is that you don't want to overexpose the fiscals to these kinds of issues. But we've done our work, we did the business case study, we came up with the model, and we presented the model to Treasury, and they appointed KPMG or PwC, one of the audit firms, to look at the model. I think it was PwC, yes, that's what our scopus. They looked at the model, and there is a number of issues that why are the banks not putting money into this themselves, but we will leave those decisions to the executive authorities to make. But at an administrative level, we feel that we've done all that was needed to be done. On FLISP, there are quite a number of projects, but what we've done on FLISP, the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Settlements, they made a very, I think, progressive comment on this issue that you can't apply this particular program based on projects, because there are people who may be in Matahia or people in Kunu who are not linked to any project. But they do, and we have access to this particular program. In other words, the subsidies should not go to projects only to people who are linked to projects. We should cover everyone in the market so that anyone can just walk in and apply for the subsidy in this particular space and get a loan from the bank. Because what we do, we get a loan and then get a subsidy from government. So we have to cover the entire population, not just those who are linked to a project. The law 1060 info, this one is linked to MDI, and I think it's work in progress as well. We didn't achieve the time. In terms of the 5 years, what we did, the first column is about 5 years, and the other one, so the first column is 1 year, I think the other one is 5 years. This is a breakdown in the last initial year from April to March of how the development finance institutions have approved. So they have issued loans, various loans, mortgage loans, incremental loans. And you can break it down. You have NHFC on the incremental loans. You have NHFC on the value approved. This is leveraging as well. And then you have RALF. RALF is the Rural Housing Loan Funding Scheme. It's one of our DFI. We've taken a decision to consolidate all of them and form one housing of human settlement DFI. So we want to have NHFC and RALF in the next financial year. We'll have one human settlement development finance and nurture, as well as the number of loans that we have issued. And again, we didn't meet this target. This is part of output 4, which is about improving the property market. I think by the end of the year, we were sitting, I think there is a missing slide here, which shows 5 years, and this one is showing 1 year. In terms of the 5 year targets, we were sitting at 80%. We didn't achieve our target on this particular one. Okay, and this is again a summary of all the loans that we have issued after 2015 by organization, by GFI. Just to break it down, I must say that the GFI did much better than the banks. If you look at the number of loans that are issued by the government owned GFIs, NHFC, RAL, they outnumber the number of loans that were issued by the banks in this period. And those figures are there, and they are all the figures. We share that with you. So which means that government-owned funding institutions do perform, and they do help to crowd in other private sector funders. Remember, in most cases, where the private banks go, they go in the areas where you have government finance institutions operating. You see it, one example that I always make is an example of DSA. In 1998, it was always difficult for the city of Joburg to because funding from the private institutions that they will use BDSA to fund, and then APSA and other banks started coming in. So private government-owned funders do crowd in private sector investments. Without wasting time, I think I'm not going to spend time on the job creation. These are the number of jobs that we have created. There is a formula that we use to determine the number of jobs, direct jobs, indirect jobs, and used jobs. And these are all in every project that we implement. the direct jobs, the indirect jobs, and the induced jobs. And my colleagues can assist in explaining that formula. It's a formula that was developed by the Department of Transportation with CSR. Again, I'm not going to waste time on this. This is the professionalization of the sector. Where we want to be, we want to professionalize the sector so that when you leave human settlements, you have a certificate, you know what needs to be done. Human settlements is one of the most complicated programs that government is implementing. So we partnered with a number of institutions to do this. This is a list of projects, mega projects, priority projects that we have implemented in the last initial year, the number of units. We are highlighting these ones because they were priority projects. These are national projects that were driven ourselves in partnership with provinces and municipalities. This is just a list, we should come back to it, so I don't want to waste time. But I think at this stage, maybe I should hand over to the CFO to take us through the MTR foundation. I'm not sure if this slide is relevant because this is just giving you an idea of our allocation over the next 3 years. But the CFO will take us through all of this. And this covers the allocation, the transfers, and the payment, and how we perform. Over to you, CFO.
Thank you very much. I don't want to get into this slide. This is just a picture of the department's budget. The most important thing about this slide is that 97% of our allocation is made up of grants and transfers to public entities. The department is only left with 3% to manage its operations. And these are the 97% of all the grants and transfer payments and the conditional grants amounting to 26 billion and transfer to entities amounting to 1 billion, giving you a total of 27.3 billion. And all the different entities, and we will get into the details of the various grants. This is a summary of the adjustment budget of the department. The original budget was 28.1 billion. There were rollovers amounting to 120 million. There was an additional allocation by Treasury of 44.5 million. And there was 20 million which was a cut during the financial year by National Treasury, giving us a total allocation of 28.2 billion. And these are the details of the adjustment estimate. The rollovers are made up of three figures. One was 100.5 million on rural household infrastructure grant. There was a 17 million for the community schemes ombud service for capitalizing that entity, the new entity. It was its first year last year. And there was an additional 3 million to help it and start operating. With regard to the 44 million, this was an additional allocation of treasury to assist the provinces to deal with disaster relief. It was part of the human settlement development grant. The 20 million was a cut by treasury on the NASP program, which has already been referred to in the presentation. This is a summary picture of the expenditure, the program by the department as at the end of financial year. If you look at the final allocation, it's 28.2 billion. The expenditure, total expenditure, is 27.7 billion, giving you a variance of 552 million. In terms of percentages, we were sitting at 98% at the end of the financial year. I will not get into the details of the individual programs, but that is where we were. You will notice that various programs were at different levels of spending at the end of the annual financial year. And these are the reasons for those programs underspending. If you look at program one, which is administration, we understand because of mainly the Special Investigations Unit. I think we were talking past each other during the year. They did not invoice us at times. At times they would invoice us but not provide all the supporting documentation, so we could not pay. The result was that we ended up underspending. The second issue which led to underspending on Program 1 was the fact that leasing and funds you allocated for leasing of additional office accommodation was not fully utilized. The unspent portion of the property portfolio was in respect of two buildings, 240 and 260 Justice Mohammed Street buildings. And the Department of Public Works entered into a lease agreement on behalf of the department, but unfortunately there was a dispute between them and the landlord. The result was that the buildings could not be refurbished and could not take occupation of the buildings. And because we did not take occupation, we did not pay for the lease of the buildings. And the result was under expenditure in that area. There was also a delay in the implementation of the NAS program. And this program takes about 30% of that particular branch allocation. The result was that we ended up underspending. Other reasons for underspending in the department is also in respect of compensation of employees' budget. The department had vacancies, which we did not fill, and as a result, we ended up underspending on the allocation. And there were also delays when recruitment was done and appointments were done. There were also delays in respect of verification or qualification for people who are to be appointed. And that also contributed to underspending on the compensation of employees' budget. This is just a picture of the 97% on how it performed. If you look at the allocation, 27.5 billion, if you look at the expenditure, 27.1 billion, leaving you with a variance of 243 million. You will notice that in respect of most of the grants, money was transferred to provinces and municipalities. For an example, if you look at the first one, Human Settlement Development Grant, the whole amount was transferred to provinces. The Urban Settlement Development Grant, the whole amount was transferred to local and to metros, as well as the Disaster Relief Grant, which was also transferred to all and to the various provinces. When you look at how the Human Settlement Development Grant, which is the biggest grant in the allocation, performed, this slide just gives a summary of how provinces performed. If you look at the DORA allocation, it was 16.9 billion. If you look at the disaster, the additional allocation by Israel, the 44 million was split by Israel among those four provinces, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape. Each getting a portion of the 44 million. What happened during the previous financial year was there was underperformance by Limpopo province. And that was mainly due to the fact that the national treasury, the provincial treasury in that province was under administration. And as a result, that contributed to underperformance by the Human Settlements Department. During the year, a decision had to be taken to move money from Limpopo and give it to areas where it can perform so that the sector does not lose the amount. So 644 million, as you can see, was moved from Limpopo and allocated to various provinces, with Free State getting 230, KZN getting 57 million, Northern Cape getting 207.9, Northwest getting 117, and Western Cape getting 32.1 million. In addition to this, I must also indicate that the decision by the executive authority as well as by the inter-ministerial committee was that this money be used to eradicate budgets throughout the country. And as you can see, the amounts allocated are in relation to the amount of budgets in various provinces. You are aware probably that Free State has got the biggest portion of the budgets in the country. When you look at the total available after the additional allocation was 17 billion, the actual transfers was 100%, the whole amount was transferred to provinces. And when you look at the amount received by provinces, it's the same, and the amount spent by provinces is 60.5 billion. I'm giving you a percentage expenditure by provinces of 97%. 3% was not spent by provinces. When you look at how that money performed in terms of delivery, you will notice that in relation to the targets, the annual delivery targets amounted to 191. And that 191 is made up of two figures, 54,164 of sites, and 137 of top structures, giving you a total of 191,601. That's what was the target beginning of the year. And then the next three columns give you how provinces performed, giving you a total delivery of 154,129 compared to the total 191,000 target. And the variances of the two columns show you that in terms of service sites, the province did not achieve and missed the target by 5,971. You will notice that in some provinces there was under overperformance. If you look, for an example, in Free State, they overachieved by 2,075. If you look at Mpumalanga, they overachieved by 4,259. And if you look at the Western Cape, they overachieved by 66 and service sites. And then when you look at the top structures built, and you will notice that provinces missed the target by 31,501, giving you a total variance for the country of 87,472. In terms of the USDG, the Urban Settlement Development Grant, which is transferred to metros, the total allocation was 9 billion. There was a rollover of 512 million, giving you a total of 9.5 billion. The whole 9 billion was transferred, and the metros, by the end of March, had spent 4.8 billion. We must remember that in terms of the financial years, their financial year is different from our financial year. Our financial year ends in March, theirs end a bit later in July, in June. But at the end of March, that is where they were. They were sitting at 50.9%. But what we have done, we are in this slide, just showing when their year end came to an end. When they came to the year end on the 30th of June, how had they performed? You will notice that in terms of expenditure, they were sitting at 92% of what was transferred and made available to them. And this is how they, on the overall, performed financially. You will also notice that in terms of performance, they vary from one metric to the other. Buffalo City was sitting at 99.9%. Nelson Mandela Bay had spent the whole allocation. Mangaung had underspent, and they were sitting at 89.7%. But on the overall, they were sitting at 92.3% in terms of their performance. This is where the money went, how Metro spent the whole allocation. You will notice that they spent the 9.5 billion on about eight areas: the special development and built environment, transport, water, sewage, solid waste management, electricity, social economic amenities, and the local economic development and job creation. Those are the areas where they spent the money. And you will also notice that in terms of sewage, they overspent. They were sitting at 110%. When you look at the overall performance, these are individual metros, how each metro has actually spent its own allocation. Chair, I don't want to go through each individual metro. This is BCM, Buffalo City Municipality, and they were sitting 100% at the end of the year, and this is how they spent their allocation. And in terms of non-financial performance, what is it exactly that they did? This slide gives you a picture of where the money went. 1,729 sites were serviced, 3.7 hectares of land was procured, 56 kilometers of roads were filled, 406 kilometer roads were rehabilitated, 56 kilometer stormwater drainage was installed, and you can go down, Jim. Because of time, I will not be able to go through each how each metro spent the money. But this slide gives you a picture of where did the money go. This is Nelson Mandela, and this is what they actually did in terms of what exactly they did with the money. This is Mangaung, and I will not actually go into each Metro to indicate exactly where did the money go. I just go through all the metros and sweep all of them. And then in terms of the audit outcomes, we achieved an unqualified audit opinion with emphasis of matters. And I must indicate here that we are not entirely very happy with emphasis of matters. We want to achieve a clean audit. That is our objective. But we had emphasis of matters on a number of areas. The first area was understanding. We understand materially on the NASA program. We also understand on the RIP grant, Rural Household Infrastructure Grant. AG was also not happy with our ATP, the way it was structured. They said that it was not fully compliant in terms of how the targets were faced. There was also an issue of consistency of indicators and targets. Reported indicators and targets were not consistent with those approved in the annual performance plan, and they highlighted that matter. They were also not happy with some targets in respect of measurability, but they were not, where they were written, they were not measurable. There was also an issue of reliability of the performance, and that they were not happy about that. And there was also an issue of non-compliance in respect of the financial statements that we tabled before them. And also the issue they raised was under human resource management and compensation of employees. They were not happy with the fact that we had vacancies. They highlighted that. They were also not happy that we did not have an approved human resource plan at the end of the financial year. The other issue they highlighted was the issue of asset management, and this was in relation to the toilet structures built by the grant and by the sanitation grant in the rural areas. Their view was that we should have kept a comprehensive register of all the structures built in rural areas and reconcile it on a monthly basis to actual expenditure. We had the register, but we were not reconciling it monthly. We were not happy with that. And they felt that we need to improve our control on that register by doing monthly recons and ensuring that it is completed before the end. And when we submit our financials, we submit a completed ready six asset register. When we submitted our financials, we did submit the register, but we finalized it after we had submitted, and they were not happy with that, and they highlighted that issue. In terms of the action plan, we have developed an action plan to address all issues raised by AG. It has been populated with all the findings, and each manager was given, was actually requested to come up with planned actions so that we can be able to address all the findings. And these planned actions are monitored on a monthly basis by the CFO branch, and each manager is required to update and indicate progress in respect of the planned actions. The Auditor General provides feedback on a quarterly basis. They look at our action plan, they look at the progress on a quarterly basis, and they provide us their feedback by way of an instrument which they call a dashboard. In that instrument, they indicate whether they are happy with some areas or whether they are not happy with some areas, but they give a feedback on our progress in terms of those planned actions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And in my own assessment, the onus on the Parliament Department, because the issues that were raised by the issue are the issues they have in our own analysis report of the performance of the department. I gave you extra time because it drills down to municipalities. It is not usual that when we have presentation, we get to the level of municipalities, but it was very important
for us to see how the money was used from national municipalities at the level. So that is why we have to be here with your presentation. Thank you. Over to you, members. Honorable Stokes, because you requested. Okay, no. Honorable, sorry, let me take the sequence. It will be Honorable Stokes, Honorable Kuku, Honorable Paola, Honorable Saki, Honorable Mamburu.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity. I think let me indicate upfront that I agree with you that it's a good presentation from the department. And the good thing also in the sense that the department is not shying away from the challenges and the very honest presentation. They are saying, well, we have underspent, and these are the reasons why we have underspent. And this is how we intend to look in the remedying the situation moving forward. I've got just one issue on two aspects. It's on the CRU, the community residential unit, and the backyard dwellers, which the COO indicated in his presentation. I just want to find out from the department on two aspects that, because I know on the, the dwellers program, backyard dwellers program, there's a long outstanding issue around, or consultation around the issue of developing a policy around it. It has been coming for quite some time now. So I don't know whether at this level, is the department also experiencing challenges in that regard? And if there are any challenges, how do you plan to correct that thing? Or if there's any other, if there's a policy that the department has developed, where that policy so that maybe we can look at it. Also on the community residential units program, if there's a policy in that regard. Thank you very much.
Into yokuncoma idepartment ngokubeka induku ebanzi xa kunee-challenges okanye imicelimngeni ndizawuthi ekwesini nangona i-challenge ikhona kule nto yengqesho ne-capacity esidepartmentini ingaske iqwalahlele because ngangomnye wonobangela ngokokuba more especially kwi-provinces i-service delivery ingahambi kakuhle. If you know which song, Pablando, get the clock on eradication of bucket system. I think the idea is for 90% of the network is because Ugunga, we call where toilets, Ugunga, where areas. Yes, I will be connected for every minister. Also, chapter 3. It department this begele target kule nto ye recruitment yayifake into ethi omnye unobangela ngokokuba babe abakwazi uqesha kukuba i-candidate sasikho open kule nto yokokuba besike ngabandakanyeka kurhwabilizo yes ematyaleni some sort but andiyazi sihlala into yokuba ayikho nenye indlela esingayenza kwi-department le nto yi-head iyenziwa okanye ayenziwa ebolini elingenza into kokuba side sibe sifikelela kule target esizibekela yona because i-department iza kakuhle kwii-plans zayo when it comes to implementation yofumaseni boba ke ngoku kunee-challenges ingaske ke ngoku siqinise kule nto yokuqinisekisa into okokuba ii-bans zethu ekugqibeleni xa kuphela unyaka mali asizube siphinde sijamelane nento yethu sibe namakhwiniba here and there. I think it's just a comment on my side on already said. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the department presentation is quite to say like Chairperson, some of the issues I want to raise are not really issues of performance, but will be issues that are linked to concerns and how these can be labeled checklists going forward by the department. The first one that I would like to raise is in respect of page 3, the hostel redevelopment program. Especially in respect to this program on the ground, what you experience is that there is a slow pace in respect of this program. And this slow pace is affecting the everyday lives of the people concerned. And it's not just a human settlement issue alone. It also has to do with a variety of social issues like service delivery, which in some of these hostels, they have a lot to be developed. Secondly, the issue of crime. It's a big problem. Because of the issues of settlement and then these social issues. Now, what can be done to speed up this program so that at least there is a change with this transformation from hostels to the hostel to the habitable family units, so that the pace is at least, maybe if the pace is at least faster, maybe these other problems, these are challenges, maybe they can be minimized. My second one, Chairperson, is in respect of the slides on this date, slide 25, just for information purposes, for my clarity, they reference a district there. Eight districts. I just want to understand that one as to how this is coming to human settlement and how this maybe other issues attached to that, I don't know. I just want to clarify. And then the next one is on the issue of rollovers on phase 20. What I want to know, Chairperson, is how much of the unspent funds was not approved by rollover by the treasurer. What we are given is the approved rollovers. How much did you apply for? How much was not approved? Because the figure given here is that of which was approved. And then my next one is on page 39, which will be the last one. Your rural what program, RHIG grant. A figure there which has been a matter of purpose by the AG. I'm also a little bit concerned, Chairperson, that monies will not be spent, especially in more areas of need, in providing houses in the rural areas, because I know that is where your most need is. It will be your informal settlements, and it will also next be your rural areas. Well, what are the reasons behind, and what are we doing? Because it's an era of concern that you will give your allocations to municipalities and they'll end up not providing 100% houses to areas where people are most needed, rural areas. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues in the apologies given to the department on a good transparent report. My question, Chair, will be, there's this issue that keeps on coming, eradication of buses in the precinct, whereby each time it is said, precinct is leading. So, from the department side, what is it, what is the problem that is actually compromising the community of the precinct, that every time this issue of bus eradication is improved? What is actually problem for the province to commit this issue of budget eradication? Thank you.
Aki bolele jwalo ka banka nna ha ba jele tjeto go department re leboga, because you're able to say this is me, the department. This is the budget that I had. These were my targets. I could reach here, I couldn't reach. I'm also happy that the report that you're giving us from the audit channel, because you were able to tell us to say these are the shortfalls. Keep it just like that to them. But the concern is, what mechanism can we apply? Because it seems the issue of non-compliance, more especially on supporting documents, is cutting across all the departments. What mechanism can we apply in order for us to get there?
Okay. Alright. Thank you.
isikolo sicela nje uAbet kwama ala Abet amqonda mosifundisa umuntu omdala umuntu angayi-understand sifuna ukuza kule nto kwi-office kakupheji 7 we-presentation on i-departmental expenditure by virtual performance targets and outcomes akukho clear into ethi leo nto ndifuna uAbet akukho nto ethisweko i-office kaminister nantsi ibhajethi yayo ifolisa kwe-PRA yona mhlawumbi ikwenye yebo niyandivamos uba nje ndirhalela kanzi ukwazi into yoba sibona njani iphi kweyiphi ibambile mos also chairperson ingathi ke sifumane sethithi kwezi outreach ezisenziwa zizonke intotal apha ekhantrini zingaphi e-Eastern Cape i-outreach ezenziweyo zi-12 e-Free State zenziwa zambini yabo zidlala kunye ne-budget thetha ndihlawumbi uze nosibuku kuthiwe e-Eastern Cape uzube kunga akachitha imali ekunga bayibona laa nto kuba ke mhlawumbi ayizohanga today but laa nto ezi ekugqibeleni ukwenzela into yoba siqinisese into yoba abo bekukhona i-outreach kaminister okanye i-department siyilandelela kanjani ukuqinisesa into okokuba okuya monitoring and evaluation yilapho enkosini ithatha phambi kwenkosini.
Thank you very much. There will be comments as well as questions. With regard to the Rental Housing Amendment Bill, I suppose that if the chairperson was here, you'd actually love us to have some time to engage on that one as well, because the rental housing is what is required, mainly in the cities, by the migrant workers, and that is what the department is actually needing to focus on to address the housing backlog. But we'll have to find time to actually unpack the bill to the committee. And then when you did the presentation, you did raise concerns about the fact that you can have the managers in the built environment that are qualified adequately to take care of issues. By the same token, it's for the department that need to run and it's for targets that need to reach. And I didn't see you coming out late with the answer as to, in the event that you can't get these people from the pool outside and you can't match what the private sector is offering, how are you going to come out then? Because there has to be a way you come out. Either you outsource the services or you share with other departments, but there has to be some kind of solution to address that issue. It's critically important. And then the issue of bursaries that are our thing, how do you go about selecting, is the selection done by provinces, or is it part, how do you track performance, and when people are qualified, do you tie them down to a period to serve the department, because that is going to affect also in this shortage of skill in the built environment. We've had complaints in the provinces that when service providers submit invoices to CFO, the department is not yet compliant with the payments for invoices within the 30-day period. That has not been forthcoming. So will you please indicate to us how far you've gone in terms of addressing those issues. In actual fact, others are complaining that they go month on end without the department paying for them. The other issue that one would wish to raise is the issue of the anti-fraud and corruption plan for the department. Have you developed that? Have you finished? I think you had promised that you'd finish it during the first quarter of this current financial year. I don't know if you have actually done it. The other fraud and prevention plan. And also, you had promised that you developed the green paper
procurement subject. That's why it's very critical, because it's going to give us direction that the department has to take over the coming year. Maybe with those remarks and questions, I have to
share the questions myself, the CFO, and colleagues from the department will also assist.
Sorry, before you respond, yes. This whole issue again of Shiklama,
yes.
Please clarify it to us.
Okay.
How is it operating? Is it operating in the municipality? What are the challenges? What are the gains they're trying to do?
Thank you, Jay. Let's start with the first question on backyard house. Backyard house. Is there a policy? Yes, we do have a policy. We can share that policy with you. The issue is not so much in the policy. The issue is in the operationalization of that policy. We had a number of case studies in the country, or pilot studies, so to speak, where we piloted it. We have a pilot here. This city, we have a pilot in the city of Johannesburg and in Gauteng. There are those challenges about the funding, the challenges about the nature of the services, the challenges on whether you provide the structure. I think we can share that policy with you. We do have it. So we package it together. SALGA is represented to a number of stakeholder workshops and also went to member, to technical member. So we can put that and share it with you. We can come and present it ourselves here, our policy unit, Mr. Van der Waalt and Ms. Gutierrez. We can come with us and present the policy here together with SALGA. There was a question about the CRU program. That CRU program, which started as a hostel redevelopment program, now it's called CRU program. The program is in place. We have been implementing it for the last 10 years since the Breaking New Ground policy, which was passed by this minister when she was human settlements, before she left human settlements. She passed the policy on Breaking New Ground, which is simply about integrated human settlements program policy. CRU is one of the 33 programs that were implemented under the human settlement. The umbrella body is the human settlements policy, the DNG policy. Then the CRU will be the program to implement that policy. There are issues you see in the presentation. We've talked about revisiting the program and revisiting the policy, because there were issues about norms and standards. There were issues about the quantum, the subsidy quantum, because this is one of the most expensive programs, so to speak, because when you redevelop that hostel, the structure, the top structure, you pay 100% of that. In some cases, the unit cost varies from 300,000 to 400,000 per unit. The challenge is not so much on the technical issues that we have put it. The challenge is more on the social side. Both of our programs, the upgrade of informal settlement program and the CRU program, those are programs that consume a lot of our time because you have to move back and forth dealing with the beneficiaries. If you look at the CRE program and the policy, it allows the beneficiaries, in fact, it compels the beneficiaries to pay. And in fact, in the target markets, there are those issues of qualification that will qualify. Now, currently, most of the hostel people are not paying. Now, once you redevelop that hostel and you construct it and you build a new greenfield project, and you're asking people who have been staying in these hostels to pay. Even if the amount that they have been asked to pay is symbolic, it's not, they're not asking them to pay exorbitant amounts. the challenge is how to enforce that, and that has been a problem. And I'm sure you've seen this with the Jabulani hospital, which is in Balkato. You have seen it with the TVs, Mandela Gufa, you have seen it here in this city as well, some of the CRU programs that were implemented in the Cape Flats, that in some cases the payment rate is shifting at 20%. And you are using the grant, especially here, to redevelop this program and need to maintain the hospital over time. And if you don't maintain it, you will be forced to use the grant again to upgrade, to rectify using this permanence because of non-payment, and you will be forced to upgrade this. But there are a lot of challenges that are associated with the hospital development program, and most of them are not technical problems because it's easy to build the structure, it's easy to get construction companies to do the work. The bulk of our challenges are on the beneficiary management part. Those are the social issues. We can give you a long list of all the hostels that we are developing and all the challenges that we are faced with in those programs. And I think you are spot on in terms of outlining all of those challenges yourself, and I concur with your analysis. Expediting it, the approach is always to make sure that right from the red go, you get the communities involved. And they will be with you as you move with the program. We have inherited projects. We are compelled by the act and by the law to have project steering committees. That's where all of these things are discussed. And the project will be delivered. But when it comes to the allocation, where you have to do the actual allocation and asking people to pay and sign the agreement, that's where the problem starts. And that's why most of them are slow projects. And I think we can expect that. There are those that have moved faster. For instance, Jabulani has moved faster. We developed that project within a short space of time. It was up and running. But it remains vacant for a very long time because you don't know how to do the allocation. And the beneficiaries now, they make a 360 degrees turn to say, we are not going to pay. Give us the allocation, give us the units. And there's no need for us to pay. But I agree with you, we can expect it. We do have the capacity to drive most of these programs. But the point is, we have to deal with the social issues that we do currently. And then there's a question about the skill. Can we headhunt? Is headhunting allowed? Yes, it is allowed. Headhunting is allowed, especially in the skills category and in the star skill category space. You are allowed to do some headhunting. The best way of, and this is the approach that I found working in my previous life as an AJOD, I used to adopt this approach where most professionals don't want to work permanently for government. And they want contracts, 3-5 year contracts. They don't want to be in payroll of government. Your town regional professionals, your engineers, your construction managers. So what you do, the government, the Public Service Regulation Act, it allows you to employ these skills, to employ these people additional to their statute. In other words, you can create a short-term contract for them, and you can negotiate how you want to pay. And when you appoint them additional to the establishment, then it means that the executive authority, the minister, must then approve the appointment. It's not an accounting office who approves contracts additional to the establishment. It is the minister. Executive authority must sign on that. So that's the approach that we have started adopting, madam. What we also did, because we're managing a budget of 30 billion rand, so we can't be a price taker. We have to be a price maker. Most of the consulting engineers and the professionals in the sector, we tell them we fix the fee. We gazette the amount and say, we will work with you, and this is the amount of money that we will pay you. So we create a panel. Already, as we speak, the CEO, CFO myself, we were talking about this. We have a panel of professional resource teams. These are consulting engineers in those environments, for town planners. In fact, in every professional team, we have about 15 professionals who are dealing with the work that we do, environmental risk specialists, engineers, town planners, architects, you name them. So we created a panel of these specialists. Treasury did the same more than 6 years ago. There's a component treasury called GTEC component, where they avoid these professionals, they fix the budget or the rates are considered, then if we have to negotiate, we can negotiate with them. But you do have that money. So government becomes the price maker instead of becoming the price seeker. You rely on the market in terms of how you pay the professionals. That works, and it shortens the turnaround time in terms of budget. So we adopted that approach to close the sales gap in the short term. There was a question about why districts are involved in human settlement. I think this approach didn't work. In fact, the districts that we're talking about are in the two provinces where districts are assessed for accreditation. It's the Northern Cape and KZN. And in the Northern Cape, it doesn't seem to be working well. Where it works well is when districts are water service authorities, because it means then that the engineering services, which is what we do, when we put a top structure, we put a lot of infrastructure underground. So it means most of the services, for instance, in KZN, we have put together district, which is a water service authority. You have a number of other districts which are water service authorities. So when you build a house, you want to work with the water service authorities so that those services are in place before you put the top structure. But it didn't work well in Northern Cape, and I think we're reviewing that model. Because in the Northern Cape, it's local municipalities that are water service authorities. There was a question about the rollover. I think the CFO will answer that question. I'll leave it to him. The question about the RIC, that is the RIC, that is the Rural Household Infrastructure Grant. You're asking why the grant was not spent, because this is a rural infrastructure grant, and there is a greatest need for rural infrastructure in our areas. When we started this program, we had two implementing agencies working in this space. When sanitation was filled with water assets, more than 5 years ago, we had Imvula Trust and IDT. And those were the two entities that were working as implementing agencies. There was a year in period where they needed to beef up their own capacities as well so that they are able to implement this program. It started, if you recall, the program started as a $1 billion program. But because of the capacity in the sector, it started scaling down. What we did, when we took over this particular function as a department, we brought in extra 6 service providers to help us to implement the program. And you will see, if you look at, I think it's 2012, 2015, we started implementing and we spent the entire grant. In the last financial year, in the past, it was a simple 6 grant implemented by departments using implementing agencies. Then the decision was taken that it needs to be a direct grant. It's just directly to the municipalities, and the municipalities will implement the grant in the trust. So there were challenges in the last financial year because Treasury had gazetted, and there was a problem between ourselves and Treasury where the gazetting went too wrong the situation. Instead of gazetting the amount of allocation to water service authorities. For instance, in Eastern Cape, most of your municipalities are not water service authorities. It's the district. So the amount should have been gazetted to Oatambo district, to Alfred, but they gazetted them to the local municipalities. So we had to correct that. They were corrected in December. And the money was dispersed in January, and we were running against time. Because you can't disperse before gazetting. Otherwise, if you committed a misconduct, there will be an audit issue. So we had to wait. We had to wait for Treasury to gather it before we can disperse the money, and that affected performance as well. Why there is a problem about irritation in the Free State? Why this challenge is continuing in the Free State? You recall that the first wave of budget eradication in the Free State was in 2005, 2006, when we put all of our, I think, corporate provided leadership, and we put all the resources together, and we put the money together with GBSA and other entities helping. What happened then is that we replaced the budget with the VIT. In other words, because in some municipalities we have no water, so you can't replace the budget with waterborne sanitation because there's no bulk water, so there will be no reticulation. So you remove the budget, when you replace them with VIP toilets, the deleted improved leak-catching toilets, which are high VIPs. The problem with the VIPs is that if they are not maintained,
properly. In other words, you don't get what they call the honey shutters to come and remove and maintain those toilets. They get full immediately. Within a short space of years, all of those toilets will be running at full capacity. As a reaction, we see in some areas that you have, there was a DIT, and the DIT that you have now is the third generation DIT within the same yard. They took some decisions in the first stage. A lot of communities were up in arms, and they said, we prepared to wait until we have dealt with water, until we have water, you dealt with water energy. We prepared to wait longer so that we can have a flush toilet. You will see in some municipalities like Manchester, where they created what they called an enclosed circuit for the purification of the sewer. And in other words, the water goes into the toilet, it moves into the sewer, they clean, then it goes to the toilet. So it's a closed circuit. The water is only used for flushing. That has its own problems as well. It has its own maintenance problem. So the problem in the first aid, the bulk challenges in the first aid are real. Special bulk water supply. That's the challenge that they are faced with in most municipalities. It's also municipalities as well. They have a number of buckets. There are more than 3,000 buckets, but they have no water. In fact, the mayor of Mangaon Municipality made a joke the other day that this water is moving from the sewer to pass our province, to Gauteng, and we don't have it in our own province. But we chopped like the human settlement grants in the last 2 years by 5%. It's an amount of about 1.9 billion, which is earmarked to help us to expedite target eradication. The bulk of that 1.9 billion is going to the system. The former Executive Authority of Water Affairs and the Executive Authority of Human Settlements, they made a resolution that we need to use water boards to expedite the process of priority eradication. In the first stage, Lumota is working as an implementing agent to eradicate maggots. To date, they have eradicated about 11,000 maggots. They started working in November last year. We gave them an amount of about 250 million. And this year they're getting about 118 million. We were a little bit worried about the unit cost, because to eradicate one toilet is costing them about 6,000. And that made us to worry, because it means that we are not going to go to get the volumes that we want. So I had a meeting with them to evaluate, because I was asked, where is the money going? We're giving you 300 million rands and you're giving us less toilets. And they told us that there are a lot of geotech issues that they have to deal with. The first thing, we look fast, but there's a lot of rock underneath. When you blast that rock, it costs a lot of money. So we gave them 5% variation of variation. But there are a lot of challenges, Chair, that we can talk about in terms of, I guess, eradication. It is a massive program. It's not with water and eradication. We still work with them. There is a Troika meeting that was established last year. I think our minister and the Minister of Water and Sanitation, they have agreed to work together to deal with this issue. To pick up the speed a little bit, the portfolio of evidence, the CFO can cover this as well. Why is it difficult to provide supporting documents when we do the audit issues? Auditing is not a very complicated exercise, because all what auditors want you to do is to document everything you do. Maybe we need to go back to the old bookkeeping exercise, that for every exercise that you do, for every initiative, you need to open a file and you need to provide supporting documents to create completeness of the work that you're doing. And I think we found one thing, and this in most cases has a lot to do with how you contract and the targets that you set. If the targets are not smart, then it's difficult to provide that audit evidence. I always tell police that we in the built environment, our targets are tangible. You either have a house or you don't, or you either have a search site or you don't. So it should not be difficult for us to set the targets, because the targets are tangible. But I think in most cases, I would say that the capacity gaps within the sector, not just the department, within the sector, those are issues that we need to deal with immediately. Because it is easy to account for all of these things. It's easy to provide supporting documents. You have every time you start a task, you need to open up a file, you need to open up a register,
And that's all that AG is looking for. So that if you don't provide supporting documents, the question, how do we know that it's done? Because the only way to know that it's done, you have to provide the audit evidence. But I think we will be able to get it back. We started with the processes. In some of the provinces, if you look at some of the provinces that got paid audits, and these are provinces that have affected this over time. Some provinces, they do have some few matters of emphasis here and there. But I think overall, the picture is beginning to change in terms of the audit evidence. The anti-fraud prevention unit is in place. My colleague from the DG's office can talk to this. I think we do have it. The bursaries, how do we do bursaries? The CFO will answer the question. The rental housing amendment bill, I think, Chair, you made this as a recommendation that we need to come here and present that bill. And maybe have a little workshop with you on the bill. I take that as a recommendation. Sorry. The green paper, we started the green paper process. We have targets and said we need to conclude the first hour of that green paper. I think in this first year of the first term, it's one of the, it's in our five-year targets. Remember, where we're going, the end stage is to amend the Housing Act. The department is called the Department of Human Services, but everything that we do is based on the Housing Act. So your green paper, your white paper processes, they need to help us to amend the Housing Act. And we have a target of 2017 to do the amendment of the Housing Act. But the green paper target, I think, this year, if I'm correct, my colleagues can correct me on this one. We want to conclude the green paper processes in this current financial year, and I think the white paper is the next financial year. But I'll verify that with the colleagues so that I will give wrong information here. Monitoring and evaluation of the outreach. We've listed some of them in the presentation, but I don't think it's a comprehensive list. To be on the safe side, we need to go back to the department. And there's a long list broken down by province, and we can share that list with you, because we had a number of outreach programs in the last financial year. Can I take that as our homework, as some part that we need to go? Thank you, Jay. I don't know if there's any other question of the budget. The minister's budget, and my colleague will deal with that. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. The minister's budget, if you look at the presentation on page 41, there are four programs, and the minister's budget is under program one, administration, which, as you can see, they achieved 70%. In terms of the rollover, Chair, the total rollover request to Treasury was 461.9 million. Treasury approved 120 million, 120.5 million. And that's the only amount Treasury approved. The total request to Treasury was 461.9. Rollovers. The actual amount Treasury approved was 120.5 million. In terms of the bursary, yes, we have a bursary scholarship program, and the department is spending about 9 million per annum on that program. And there is a process of selection which is done with provinces and the national department. I think they have a committee in place and they move from one province to the other and to select students from each province. And after completion, provincial departments, I think they provide those students with an opportunity to serve internships and in some cases they get full employment in the provincial departments. With respect to 30 days...
What does that say? When you say sometimes they get full employment or internships, in other words, I get the sense that they use the bursary for the department, but there is no contract that ties them down to render service to the department over a defined period.
there is a, but if you don't have a position, if you've got a structure of 50 people and you don't have funds to appoint that student who has completed, that student is free to apply somewhere else in government, and you cannot tie them down under those circumstances. In respect of the 30 days, I must admit here that we have not eradicated this problem completely. We are we have been addressing it in the last years. We have been reducing, as a national department, the number of invoices paid late. We are doing an analysis on a monthly basis. We have put in place a number of measures to actually ensure that this is addressed. But we have not eradicated it completely. We still have it, as you can see, even on our management letter, HR has raised it, that it's still there, but they recognize that it is now at a lesser extent than it used to be in the national department. I must also admit that we have not done an analysis of how provinces are performing on this. And what we have actually raised is actually challenged me that we need to actually go to provinces as well and actually establish of how are they doing and what progress and what measures do they have in place to address this problem. We only relied on the fact that the new treasury instruction compels everyone, provincial departments and national departments, to report to treasury monthly on this problem of 30 days. We only relied on that. I think we need, as the National Department of Human Settlements, not just to leave it to treasury, but also to go down and actually find how far our province is with regards to addressing this. I think that's all from my side.
Except that I'm quite convinced about the issue of the placement of the desert in the department, because the very department that said you are uninsured of skill sales, you then prefer students to acquire the skill sales. But when they've completed, you then say you don't have funded vacancies. I don't seem to be able to reconcile that kind of situation, but maybe it will end it even later.
Maybe if the DDG allows me to go further, maybe what we probably should do with regard to the scholarship program, maybe we should get the colleagues who are managing it to come and present before you a comprehensive report on how the scholarship program is performed, where it is, and what are the intricacies of the program. Maybe it will give you a better picture of how it has done and what we are actually doing.
But lastly, therefore, the vacancies, the 10% of the vacancies, somewhere around there, are they funded vacancies, or are they in terms of job the available? Are those vacancies funded, or what is the production?
The ones on the annual report, they are funded, yes, but at the beginning of, maybe I should say, 2 months ago, we were sitting at 108. Yes, funded vacant positions. 2 months ago, we were sitting at 108. However, the challenge about it, Chair, I must say, is that at that point, when we were looking at the numbers, Treasury instituted a cut on us, on compensation of employees' budget. They've actually cut our compensation of employees' budget moving forward from next year by 54 million, which means that some of those vacancies, you will have to freeze them because you will not be able to appoint people on those vacancies. If you go ahead this year and appoint people, you will not be able to pay them moving forward because of the cut. So we are currently going, reviewing to actually determine which positions will you have to advertise and which positions you will have to freeze. Because of the cut, you will have to link positions to the cut and say, okay, these ones we have to leave. And then these ones, we must proceed and appoint. And that is what has happened. But at that point, I must say, sir, we were sitting at 108 in positions.
That is the last one on, do we have a fraud and corruption policy? The answer is yes, we do have. However, chair, it's still a draft that will be taken through the internal process amongst others to go to our audit committee. What we do have as well is the whistleblowing policy and the fraud prevention plan, so those are in place. We did indicate that we'll have this finalized by first quarter, but we're in the process of analyzing this exercise.
The Sluma, I was hoping that one of my colleagues from the planning component will come here and explain it. Our take on Sluma is that the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform are the custodian of the whole Sluma, and they set broad parameters and principles on how we're going to deal with this. There are sector issues that need to come out of Sluma. For instance, human settlement has started with human settlements master special plan, and that human settlements master special plan has to be in line with the principles of the act of Sluma. COGSA will also take an initiative which will be in line with Sluma in packaging some of the sector municipal plans. So our view is that the actual implementation personalization of Sluma is in the sectors.
Thank you. We've come to the end of the response, please. I don't know if members do want to pose a critical question for the authority. All right. It would appear that we've actually come to the end of our presentation. We want to really thank the department, especially for a very straightforward and honest presentation, highlighting the issues that have been raised by the AG. But I do want to say that on behalf of the Select Committee, it raises concerns if the AG raises emphasis of matter over a period of time year after year, and those are not addressed. So I would really plead that next time the department comes back to the Select Committee, all those issues that the AG has addressed, there is evident that the department has worked on them with a view to resolving those issues. We are moving towards the same audit. I was happy again to note that you are not very proud of the unqualified audit because you want to move to the team audit. But again, as you said, I hope with the committee you are taking care of the department insofar as financial management is concerned, because you might get an unqualified audit as national, but the provinces must do the same. So I thought that the presentation would actually get an idea of the audit outcome of the provinces with the Human Services Department. But next time, would really like to see it. And also issues that have been raised by Treasury with respect to shifting tariff annual performance plan without getting due authority. That also, we are not going to see that when you come for presentation for the current financial year. Also issues of the public service regulations that are not adhered to. And by the way, it does concern us as the Select Committee that there are senior, very senior officials in the department. You find that the one is acting as DG chief, but the chief director for them again. You know, we understand your problem of not being able to get the requisite skills for you to effect proper employment. But one wonders how they manage, given the task, the enormous task ahead for this department to actually comply with the APP. So those issues really are issues that we need to take care of, sticking to the proper regulation. And this sanitation function, we said the ministers agreed to work together. But come March 2015, it separates completely. So it's going to go to water and sanitation. We will not ask you on that come next year going forward. If that's the situation. Okay, thank you. With those few remarks, then I want to say that thank you very much once again to honorable members and the department, and we declare the meeting closed. Meeting adjourned. Thank you. Okay. This member will remain for passing the meeting. Thank you.
I like these guys. They're running a good conference for their members.
Honorable members, I hope you do have
a better
and the reports of the hour is issued. Okay, let's start with the minutes. Minutes of the 7th of November. Are there any issues on page 1? Any corrections on page 2? Any corrections on page 3? Any corrections on page 4, members? I shall. Any corrections on the last page? I think a member to move the adoption at the second appeal. Honorable Mamporo, or for something to say, yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Something that I want to say is that we couldn't adopt this meeting for the reason that we were not able to form a lot. In the future, we need to actually members, because we cannot only give a minute to the next decision. Thank you.
Thank you. The point taken. I think I would have something.
No, sir. It's also just a comment from me to say, my predicament, sir, with regards to attending meetings, that I'm alternating other committees. They are so very important, but for now, why I alternate zone, and zone is simply disposed. So sometimes I have to be there so that, you know, I am on board in respect of the issues that are on there, because I alternate zone, who is not there. If I'm also not there, indefinitely, it means there is nobody from KwaZulu-Natal in those committees. Thank you.
Okay, would you note what the group is saying? And I think members are taking notes of each other. The group is moving adoption of minutes and second. Second, thank you. Minutes adopted. Then we move on to the minutes of the 11th of November. page 1. Page 3, page 4, and the last page. Members, I'm sure. I'll take a number 2, adoption. Both are seconded by Shari. Thank you very much. Name is adopted. Then the report of our conversation is to the interview. I suppose that the members did get an opportunity to read the report. And I'm going to be moving page by page again for members to raise issues or questions that they propose. The table of contents, any issue there? Nothing. The following page, nothing as well. Page 1, is there an issue that was changed already? Or that was published for what? Okay. Apologies for that, but I don't think it was deliberate. It was definitely not deliberate. Official, please take those of it. All our sessions.
I'm just
by then. Yeah, because I know royalties is coming. But I can see that the number is expanding.
The purpose of conducting oversight at all outcome ministry was to assess the progress made in the implementation of the national health insurance in one of under the table purpose of the oversight.
Second sentence in page 1 after the purpose of the oversight. Second sentence in the paragraph. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. I seek a member to adjust of the report and the second. Honorable Mpabo Skobane, seconded by Honorable Mpuru, report adopted by committee. Thank you. There is a last set of minutes and rules. Minutes of the 28th of October. Which has distributed it? They were distributed some time ago, but because there was a forum, by the end of the meeting, we could not adopt them. So we need to regularize them. Page 1 of the minutes of the 28th of October, the electoral situation. Page 2. Page 3. Page 5 is the last page of the menu. We're almost on the at the same member page to move in the second then. Or in group, second then. Or in the study. Or the menu is adopted. I think that was the final issue. I don't know if the announcement committee secretary.
The only announcement that I have is with regard to the business of the committee for next week. I think there was an application that was made for the committee to travel to Pretoria and meet with the Department of Water and Sanitation to do overtime. My understanding is that that application has not been approved, so we are waiting. Maybe there will be some political intervention with the House, face of the House to approve, but yeah, for now, it will mean that we will meet with the Department of Water and Sanitation here in Cape Town next week, on Tuesday.
Oh, they think that they're on Tuesday.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. I just want to mention that this publication was distributed to members. This is to prepare members for the joint meeting on Friday that's coming on gender-based violence in the House. So, this is for the perusal.
But also I'm going to be represented by me. Yeah. By me. They must give us their perspective of gender violence. I've been talking and talking, they were quiet. So Kaula and the Hebrew will tell us the extent which they are abusing women. But tomorrow we are going to be meeting at the health, I think. And both in South Africa, some business. Tomorrow. I'm not yet sure with you. I'll see what they bring me this. The first point. I'm not sure. Let's wait. We'll see from there. Thank you. Thank you very much. Please have a